The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? We're back with another exciting episode of The Crossover here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brame, along with you. Today's episode, we'll hit a little NFL draft for you, give you our thoughts about what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't like. We'll also talk about the Braves for a little bit, and I also wanted to get to this Manny Machado being thrown at by the Red Sox thing, this kind of rivalry or bad blood that's developed between the two sides, and kind of just talk about how silly it is that grown men can throw a baseball as fast as they can at someone and not get in trouble, yet if the shoe was on the other foot and the player that was at the plate had the bat in his hand and tried to do something with it, he would get suspended for a large chunk of the season. But we'll get to all that pretty soon. We'll start things off, though, like I said, with the NFL draft. And, Brame, I'll throw it to you here. Thoughts on the draft and how everything went down?
Well, let's start with the Falcons. With the Falcons, it's kind of a lukewarm draft for Atlanta, and I guess that's where, the Falcons made the Super Bowl last year and came close to winning it and don't really have a ton of obvious weaknesses. That doesn't mean that there aren't places on the team that Atlanta can improve, and I think they addressed one of those areas, and that's the pass rush with their first pick in Tack McKinley. There's nothing about McKinley that blows me away, but there's no obvious warning signs about him either that make me think that it's an awful pick that Atlanta made. And I do love the guy's personality. And I love too that, what's the guy's name? Clay Travis.
Oh yeah. The guy that does that Outkick the Coverage website.
Yeah, he was making jokes on Twitter about the portrait of his dead grandmother.
What a schmuck. Like, yeah. What an idiot.
And I love too that McKinley sent back, if anyone was wondering whether or not the devil was alive and well, here he is. And
right.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, how do you even go after a guy that's honoring his a deceased relative like that? And to came from where he did to now make it in the NFL, hopefully make it in the NFL, but I do like the potential there for him to be a real star for the Falcons in Atlanta if he produces, obviously. But, there was nothing about Atlanta's draft that I was head over heels in love with. But at the same time, I didn't think it was, terrible by any means either. So,
yeah, it was okay. I mean, and just looking at what they did, I mean, obviously you mentioned Tack McKinley there and his a boisterous celebration upon being drafted, and good for the NFL for not finding him for that. He was excited about fulfilling a lifelong dream and being able to honor his grandmother with that, so that was cool. I like the pick of Duke Riley there in the third round, the Falcons trading out of the second round to get more picks and get some more depth, and we talk about this a lot on both of our shows, where if you're drafting players from big-time programs like a Duke Riley, who's battle-tested in big-time situations, and also if he's at LSU, he's not a bad football player. So you've got that going for you. At least in theory, they're not a bad football player. So he comes there in the third round as well as the pick that they made for in the fourth round there, Sean Harlow, the center from Oregon State. You had DeMonte Casey, the cornerback from San Diego State, and Brian Hill in the fifth round, the running back from Wyoming. Once you get past the fifth round, you're kind of grasping at straws. They did take the tight end from Drake, which in the fifth round, I don't know if I necessarily would have wanted to reach there just because it's a tight end from Drake. I mean, the fifth round, you still feel like you're getting players that could contribute and be really big parts of your team. And, I mean, did you have to make that pick in the fifth round?
I feel like that's an undrafted free agent potentially
right
out there if you need it. And that would be my biggest gripe at the draft for Atlanta. But, again, like you said, we're talking about a fifth-round pick, so it's not like I'm going to lose my mind over that. But, my point of view with that is once you get to those later rounds and when it just becomes a guessing game at that stage, that I would take a shot on a tight end from Duke.
Right.
I mean, it plays out of the ACC before I would a tight end from Drake. I mean, I get it. Those players from small schools, they make it, but I feel like generally guys that come from from places like that now that succeed in the NFL are usually identified by scouts and are taken much earlier in the draft and sitting there in the fifth round. So, I mean, that would be my only issue with it, but, I mean, that's not anything I'm going to go too crazy about. It was a fifth-round pick.
Right, and I believe I heard you say on the home team that it's almost like – it might have been you or might have been Adam, but it's almost like one of those picks – where it seems like the front office trying to make themselves look smarter than you or, like, smarter than everyone else by taking a guy
like
that.
Because, like, they took it was a couple years ago, like, they grabbed a guy from Furman in the sixth round. I mean, guess what? That guy's not in the league anymore. But, yeah, I feel like when you're – yes, when you're reaching for guys from schools like that, it's like, oh, we scouted this guy, and we know something about him that the rest of the NFL doesn't know.
Yeah.
Sure, okay.
What they know is that he probably won't be around for too long if you're taking him from Drake. One interesting thing I saw in regards to the draft was that Dio Orlando Ledbetter, the beat reporter for the Falcons for the AJC, said that he thinks that the running back, Brian Hill, they took out of Wyoming, will be the third down back for the Falcons because Steve Sarkisian likes to run it on short yardage. And that could be even less reason to pay Devontae Freeman $8 to $10 million a year, and that Ledbetter thinks that Sark will use Coleman and Hill in 2018 and that we will be saying goodbye to Devontae Freeman. I don't like the sound of that.
Well, I don't either because I like Devontae Freeman, but Devontae Freeman's agent, who's Luther Campbell's wife,
oh gosh,
going back to the Super Bowl, they're talking about wanting to be paid elite running back money. And when you've already got Tevin Coleman on your roster, I don't think that Devontae Freeman is a guy that Atlanta needs to be investing elite running back money in, where he wants to be paid like amongst the top five running backs in the league. I like Freeman. He's a good player for Atlanta, but the price has to be right for a guy like that. So, as far as the negotiations that we're aware of now that have been going on kind of publicly, going back to all the thoughts around the Super Bowl, would lead me to believe that Freeman probably won't end up re-signing with Atlanta long-term, and I think this kid Hill out of Wyoming might be a bit of an insurance policy if that does come to pass. I mean, he was a workhorse last year. He finished second in the country in carries, so Wyoming definitely put the ball in his hands. He ran for like 1,800 yards, so he might turn out to be decent, but I do think that's the first sign that maybe Freeman isn't long for a Falcons uniform.
I don't like it. I don't like it. Hopefully, from my perspective, they end up being able to work something out because I've really liked seeing what Devontae Freeman's done in a Falcons uniform. Let's look around at some of the other teams in the draft and see what they did. And I think first and foremost, you have to start with one of the worst drafts I think I've seen in maybe a decade, and that's the Chicago Bears trading up to get Mitchell Trubisky. And the crazy thing about that was, I don't know if you saw the story where John Lynch, you know, the new GM of the 49ers, was like, wait, so they want to trade up? Oh, are they going to take Solomon Thomas? And he was like, no, they're going to take Trubisky. He's like, well, they just signed Glennon. So the 49ers were kind of taken aback that the Bears would even come up and do that. And they had to give up a lot to do it. I mean,
three picks.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So for them to move up and take Mitchell Trubisky again after they had signed Mike Glennon, although the Glennon contract isn't as ironclad as like a lot of people I seemed like were making it out to be. I mean, I think it's like $2.5 guaranteed $1 million like this season, and there's some other stuff incentive wise obviously in there, but they're pretty much not really tied to him after this season. So I think that a lot was overblown there, but at the same time, you look at a guy like Mitchell Trubisky, and by moving up and by giving up what you gave up to get up there to get him, don't you think you kind of have to, not necessarily start him, but at some point this season, I mean, he's got to play.
You would think, but maybe they've got Glennon as that backup to where Trubisky doesn't have to start immediately in week one. But ultimately, the Bears draft this year is going to be judged on how Trubisky turns out to be as a pro. But then, you know, you look in the second round, they took a guy from Ashland. Then they took a guy from North Carolina A&T, and then they took a guy from, I don't remember, it was like another small, like Division II or, you know, FCS school, and they had Eddie Jackson. Eddie Jackson might be their best pick out of Alabama.
I was going to say, how do you take a tight end from Ashland in the second round?
Like, right.
That is absolutely
so
ridiculous.
The Bears ended up with five picks, and three of them were from small schools, players
Ashland,
from small schools.
North Carolina A&T, and Kutztown.
Oh, that's right. And then the Kutztown is the other one. So I mean, ultimately, it's going to boil down to how Trubisky goes, but that is that looks like it could replace the Falcons' 2012 draft starring Peter Kahns, where none of those players are even currently on any NFL roster, much less the Falcons. But at least, like, Kahns was a second-round pick. I mean, this is – we're talking about the number two pick in the draft that they moved up one spot to get. And by the way, he was also the second-best quarterback in the ACC last year.
Absolutely, and the one that was the best quarterback ends up going – to the Houston Texans, who trade up to get Deshaun Watson. If Bill O'Brien's this quarterback guru, like people always talk about him being, I think this is an outstanding pick for the Texans because, look, they got rid of Brock Osweiler to the Browns, which, amazing move. I mean, basically, it just turns into the Browns paying them for the second-round pick, I mean, that they got in that
right,
trade.
They got draft picks.
Right, I mean, they paid for a draft pick, and Osweiler will probably – I mean, maybe he'll compete for that starting job there, but he'll probably be sitting on the bench, you know, with Cody Kessler and DeShone Kizer also there. But you look at what the Texans did. I really liked what they did getting DeShone Watson. And a team in the Browns who, you know, you talk about bad drafts. Remember the 2011 trade where the Falcons got Julio Jones out of it, and none of the players that none of the draft picks that the Browns got from that draft are even in the NFL right now. So the Browns historically have been bad at this, but I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, I think they're understanding the value of draft picks, and next year they're going to own two drafts, theirs and the Houston Texans, for the trades that they've made for Osweiler and then even letting them move up to get DeShone Watson.
Yeah.
And I know there's the stories, too, that they're maybe trying to package some of those draft picks and entice the Patriots into sending them Jimmy Garoppolo. So far the Patriots aren't budging on that, though. But you know, at least it looks like – I think Cleveland gets that there's no way that they're going to be immediately good. That next year they still might be one of the worst teams in the league, but they've been so bad that it's going to be a process of getting better. And the way you do that is by drafting really well. And, you know, you figure if you've got like a dozen draft picks every year, you're not going to miss on every single one of them. And so I think that, you know, Jonah Hill, who's over there running things in their organization – he's, I think that's his, that money ball approach that he's kind of bringing now to what Cleveland's doing in the draft.
Yeah, and I'll say this, in terms of getting Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers, they got two of the best defensive players in this draft, and they didn't reach on a quarterback. Because look, as much as I like DeShone Watson, as much as a lot of people like Mitchell Trubisky, I don't think either one of those guys is that Andrew Luck, you know, Peyton Manning, sure thing coming out of college where you're like, all right, we're going to get this guy and he's immediately going to be able to start and immediately going to be able to help us win games. I don't think any of the quarterbacks in this draft were that.
No, and I think the 49ers were smart too, that they didn't panic and say, right, we have to have a quarterback.
It's a long-term plan. You know, I think you need to have a long-term plan, and a lot of these teams automatically just want to go ahead and get that quarterback now when, you know, it could be that none of these guys pan out. And good for the Browns, too, that they got a mix of Tom Brady and Cam Newton, a.k.a. DeShone Kizer, in at quarterback.
Yeah. Now, I mean, they've had bad luck before with Brady Quinn, the former Notre Dame quarterback, but they took him. You know, that's the one where we've got to have a quarterback, got to have a quarterback, so they drafted him in the first round. Here they get Kizer in the second round. I think they made potentially three solid first-round picks, and then they're going to have a bunch of draft picks next year, too.
Yeah, and he's a project guy, I think, Kizer. I don't think he's a guy you can throw in there immediately to start. So he's a guy that can sit there and learn. I don't know how much you're going to learn from Cody Kessler and Brock Osweiler, but just get within the system, get more comfortable in it. So I really liked what the Browns did. I thought that New Orleans didn't do too poorly either in what they were able to do. And, you know, getting Marshawn Lattimore, the cornerback from Ohio State, because here's the thing, corners are at such a premium right now because the passing game is so just jacked up right now in the NFL. So getting,
and they had a terrible pass defense.
Right, and so getting arguably the best cornerback in this draft, he was the first corner off the board, is a good move for them. So I thought they did well. And quite frankly, I'm pretty terrified right now if Cam Newton can get back to playing well. That backfield with Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey in it is certainly one to look out for, because they could have drafted Leonard Fournette. Obviously, Fournette went, you know, the number four pick to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that's probably a good pick for them too because they need help in the running game. But Christian McCaffrey is much more of a complement to what Jonathan Stewart does. And I don't know how much longer Stewart has, but he's been a very good back for them, and he's more of the straight nose, kind of between the tackles runner. And McCaffrey can do everything. He's that jack of all trades back. So with that backfield of Cam Newton and Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey, you know, if you're another team in the NFC South, that kind of has you worried a little bit, I would think.
And it might take a little bit of stress off Newton too, who's, you know, got recovering now from off-season rotator cuff surgery, which would long-term, honestly, if I was a Panthers fan, that would have me discouraged, especially knowing that he was playing hurt at the end of last season and what really were some meaningless games for him, but they kept him out there for, I mean, who knows why, but now, you know, he's dealing with that on his throwing shoulder, so will he ever be the same? But now with McCaffrey, it takes a little bit of the, you know, might take a little bit of the pressure off Newton to just be absolutely the primary star there. That's the thing about the Falcons. While I didn't, I mean, there was nothing I hated about the draft. While I wasn't necessarily in love with it, I think it's got a chance to be a good draft. It was my least favorite draft of all the teams in the NFC South, though, because the Saints did address some needs defensively early on. I also like their pick of Alvin Kamara.
And that's the thing, too, because they did sign Adrian Peterson, but I don't think anybody thinks that he's going to be, you know, a long-term solution there. I thought that was a bad signing, quite frankly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that does. In fact, if they want to hand the ball off to Peterson more, and that makes there's less passing from Drew Brees, I'll take that. But, you know, adding O.J. Howard there to that Bucs offense,
that's scary.
Yeah, Winston another weapon to throw to, because they've got Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson already there. I like what all three of the other teams in the NFC South did. And if I was ranking the drafts of the teams in the NFC South, I'd probably have Atlanta's last. Not that it was a bad draft. I just didn't like it as much as the other three.
Yeah, I'd probably put them in New Orleans pretty close. I would say that Tampa and Carolina definitely had really good drafts. O.J. Howard is another weapon for Jameis Winston, scares me. But I'm still not 100% sure what Jameis Winston is. Like, he's a very talented quarterback. He's got an arm that can throw the ball out of the stadium. But between the ears, you know, is he going to make the right decisions on the football field? And I'm not even talking about anything off the field. I'm talking about those split second, you know, trying to fit throws into too tight of windows, things like that. You know, I think I heard somebody on ESPN say the other day that Jameis Winston's kind of at a crossroads this year, where either he's going to take that next step and really show that he could be an elite level talent, or he's just going to kind of flounder and he could be Jay Cutler.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's thrown for 4,000 yards in his first two seasons. I mean, he was the number one pick in the draft. Well, I certainly don't view him right now being on this, you know, Hall of Fame trajectory. I think it's safe to say, if you're a Tampa fan, that you didn't have a bust. I mean, you do have a guy there at quarterback for you that can, you know, that you probably can envision now being your starting quarterback for a good decade if he stays healthy. So, you know, they're certainly not in the position that, like, the Rams are, who took Goff last year, and
right,
where you already pretty much write him off.
And a couple more, I guess, quick draft notes was the pick by the Bengals in getting Joe Mixon. I mean, is that something that surprised you at all, that that was the team that took him?
No, of course not. And then the Raiders taking Conley out of Ohio State.
Rape allegations.
Yeah, the Raiders and Bengals taking those two, the sketchy characters, made all the sense in the world.
And, you know, I think I liked the pick that the Broncos made, getting Isaiah McKenzie, the only UGA player drafted in the 2017 NFL draft. But I think he can be a good player. He can kind of be like, you know how Emmanuel Sanders has been for them, you know, for all those years. I think he can kind of be that mold. He can return kicks. He can do a lot for them. And, you know, chasing a guy like that around in that high elevation could be a nightmare for some team. So I thought that was a good pick. And staying with Denver, Chad Kelly, Mr. Irrelevant, the most relevant Mr. Irrelevant ever, because of his background, because of his family ties. Am I crazy in thinking that the quarterbacks in this draft were so kind of lumped together that it's entirely possible that if Chad Kelly can get his head on straight and not be a screw-up, that talent-wise, he could be the best quarterback in this draft?
No, I mean, Bill Polian has even said that he thinks that Kelly could be the most talented quarterback in the draft. And we were talking about a guy that a year ago, we're, you know, talking to SEC and previewing the SEC. Who's the best quarterback in the SEC? I think the answer would have been Chad Kelly a year ago. Did it turn out to be that way last season? Probably not, but You know, there have definitely been, like you said, more irrelevant Mr. Irrelevance, that Kelly might be one of the more, if not the most interesting one that has been taken. When you think about Denver's quarterback situation right now, they've got Trevor Siemian, who started, mm-hmm. Paxton Lynch out of Memphis. Although Lynch and Kelly met in college, and Memphis did beat them a couple of years ago.
Yes,
but
they did.
Yeah, I don't know. I look at that and feel like, I mean, Kelly might have a chance to go there and start.
Yeah, I did like.
Sure, why not?
I did like what John Elway said when asked about drafting. He goes, well, I talked to his uncle, and he assured me he's a good kid.
So yeah.
Basically, that's just saying, you know, I was doing a favor to Jim Kelly.
Yeah, he's got the family ties too. So
if his last name wasn't Kelly and he had all this stuff attached to him, he would not have been drafted.
Probably not. No.
All right, we'll switch gears now and hit a little baseball here. We'll talk about the Braves for a minute and then get to the age-old tradition of grown men throwing a baseball at someone
else. What's the unwritten rules of baseball, Sam?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely. But the Braves right now sit at 11-14. Upon this recording, their last win was against the Mets with a 9-7 win. Freddie Freeman hit a bomb of a home run, 422 feet, that had like an apex of like 117 feet in the air. So, I mean, he continues to have...
And got out fast.
It did. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. He continues to have a phenomenal season. And it's so funny with Freddie Freeman, too, because at this point last year, a lot of Braves fans, including myself, were like, hey, they need to shop him and see what they can get.
Yeah, I know the guy was set to have his salary escalated to this year where he's a $20 million man now, but was not that caliber of player. I mean, I was in that camp too that I said, you know, Freeman, the thing about him is he's not the type of hitter that I think in a clutch, you know, in any situation, not even just clutch, but if there's guys on base and Freeman's at the plate, you know, like where I've got to stop and watch this at bat because something good is about to happen. But he absolutely is that player now, and we're a month and a couple days into the season. The National League MVP race is a two-horse race between Freddie Freeman and Bryce Harper. Harper's team, unfortunately, is better, has a better record right now, but Freeman and Harper are the two guys that are going to be putting up, it looks like, just going back and forth this season with just absurd numbers. And you know, Freeman for a long time looked like maybe he'd be about a 25 to a 30 home run guy, but I mean, he's already got 10, so.
Yeah, he's just raking right now. I think that the biggest question mark going into the season for this team was, okay, you've got a really good, solid foundation offensively with guys like Freddie Freeman, Matt Kemp, Ender Inciarte, and you've got some other guys, you know, Minik Markakis in the past has hit very well. Dansby Swanson, who has struggled to start this season, is a guy who you hope gets better and better and more into a rhythm. Brandon Phillips is a guy that in the past has been a decent offensive player. So I think the foundation was there offensively to score runs. The big question mark was always going to be the rotation, this patchwork rotation that you put together to hold over until the young arms that you have in the farm system are ready to go. So you have a Bartolo Colon who has just been kind of decent.
He has a good start and then like a lousy start and a good start. Yeah, he keeps going back and forth.
R.A. Dickey, another guy that's just kind of okay. Jaime Garcia. So, I mean, these guys are okay. And that was the big question. Like, if they could kind of overachieve, then maybe this team could you know, be a 500, above 500 team. If they underachieve, then you're probably looking at, you know, a 70-something win team. And right now, through the first, you know, 25 games, you still don't really know just because they've had their ups and they've had their downs. The guy that just concerns me more than any is Julio Teheran because he's never been consistent. He's always kind of had good starts, then bad starts. And to be your number one and your ace, I just don't necessarily see him as like an ace.
No, I don't think he is either. And, you know, maybe the Braves, honestly, don't view him that way, too, because there have been thoughts that they've looked around at maybe shopping him over the last couple of years. But, no, he looks like he's like more of a guy that would be a solid 2-3 guy in the rotation for sure. But moving forward, you hope a lot of these other young arms that Atlanta's made trades for that are sitting in the minors right now really emerge, and one of them does come up there to be that rock solid starter, because I don't think when you're wanting to get back into contention mode in a couple of seasons, yeah, I don't know that Teheran being your number one is going to be the guy that's going to necessarily get you there.
No, I definitely agree with that.
And also, I mean, the bullpen is still wretched this year too. And Atlanta's got three big problems still from last year. The bullpen's terrible. Catcher's useless.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And Garcia at third base is not should not be a long term fix there either.
Which is why before the season there was an article that said Atlanta should, I think it was ESPN, that said Atlanta should trade for Evan Longoria. And you would think they have the pieces to do that. I mean, they do have a lot of young pitching and young prospects in the farm system. You know, could you part with maybe an Ozzie Albies to go get an Evan Longoria? And that's the thing. That would add a lot of punch to the middle of that lineup, and it would also give you an everyday third baseman that was going to be way more reliable than Adonis Garcia. That's just something that was floated out there. There was no concrete evidence that Atlanta was even looking in that direction, but certainly would have made for an interesting discussion.
Well, that would have been if the Braves are like, we want to win now. Flags fly forever. We want to win right now. But but it was Evan Longoria the missing piece? No. So I'm glad they didn't trade Ozzie Albies. I guess Rio Ruiz is another guy that's in the minors that I guess could come up and maybe play third base. But yes, Swanson is the one who, this is now his first full season. I know the book baby gets out on him. He came up last year, hit over 300 toward the end of the year. And I know there were a lot of expectations to hopefully have him in the Rookie of the Year race. And now already Atlanta's moved him from second in the order. And now they've got him down there hitting eighth. But hopefully he picks it back up, or just picks it up. But with Ruiz, Albies, and Swanson, and then Freeman, I'm sure that's the infield Atlanta visions in a couple of years.
Oh, yeah, and we'll definitely hit the Braves probably a little bit in each episode of the crossover here, just kind of updating on what we think they're doing at the time, how they can improve, stuff like that. So we'll continue to talk Braves here on the crossover. But as we get out of here today, one last topic to get to, and you mentioned the unwritten rules of baseball. Manny Machado had Chris Sale from the Red Sox throw at him, threw behind him, actually, and it did not make Machado very happy, and Machado actually later homered off of Chris Sale in the game. But this all goes back to when Machado apparently had a hard slide into second that took Dustin Pedroia out for a couple days, and the Red Sox haven't really gotten over it. This is the most maddening thing in all of sports to me, these unwritten rules of baseball, where, oh yeah, it's okay for a pitcher to throw a baseball 95 miles per hour at a guy, and quite frankly, that could kill you. I mean, if it hit you in the right spot, I know they're wearing helmets, but...
Yeah, but still.
If you get hit in the right spot, you could die from getting hit by a 95-mile-per-hour fastball. And what recourse does the batter have to go tell his pitcher to throw one of their guys? It's childish. It's pathetic. It's absolutely disgraceful. And the fact that they can get away with this... Look, if you're Rob Manfred and you wanted to do away with this in baseball, one easy way. Next time somebody intentionally throws at someone... suspend them for like a couple weeks.
Well, the problem too is like then as soon as it happens and if the umpires feel it was done intentionally, then they issue the warnings and then the other team can't retaliate and then just like the blood keeps boiling,
right,
boiling because they want to get even with them. But yeah, I mean, the pitchers do need to grow thicker skins.
And grow up.
Yeah, and I guess with the Machado thing, okay, they feel there was actually a physical play on his part and it wasn't just merely him primping after a home run, although he did do that the other day when he hit that shot over the monster.
Oh, yes,
but
he did.
But I mean, there seems to, with Machado, there was Carlos Gomez of the Brewers. Remember when McCann
the
was
fun
there?
Police, right?
Yeah, was greeting him at home plate after a home run, and then even with Joey Bats, and it just is, it's players from the same part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That just they come up and they grow up with a different atmosphere.
They play the game differently. They're parties. I mean, you've got like people with like trumpets and drums in the stands. I mean, the South American, Central American version of baseball is different, and all of these players that grew up playing baseball in America want to have this ridiculous reverence for the game, and like, you can't have fun, you can't celebrate, just hit a home run, put your head down, run around the bases, and go back to the dugout. It's like, you know this is a game, right?
Yeah, they're playing, and they're having a good time.
Yeah, so, I mean, the fact that, I have no problem with bat flips. I have no problem with staring at a home run. You know why? Hitting a home run's hard. And if I was up to the plate and I hit one, I would admire my work as well because it's not easy. And if you don't want somebody to bat flip and you don't want somebody to stare down their home run, here's an idea. Don't allow them to hit a home run.
And that's why like the late Jose Fernandez, where, he did a lot of that on the mound. He would strike you out. He was very animated and everything. But what you realize, too, is when guys homered off of him, he tipped this cap to him. I'm like, you got me. And, you know, that's, I think, the thing with those, with the Latin players is it goes both ways. I mean, they respect it if big plays made against them, but they are just having a good time. And it's like the gringos need to start figuring that out.
They do.
And grow some thicker skin. Cause it is, it's those guys they're the ones that are angry about it. When a guy just admires a home run, they're not doing like a Degeneration X move, you know,
no,
Adam, right?
Chop. Yeah. You're not doing the chop.
They're not doing that. They're staring. They're not, you know, they're staring at their home run, go over the green monster for a few seconds.
Yeah. So again, lighten up. It's a game. As much as I despise Bryce Harper because he's on the Nationals, I respect the fact that he's going out on this, you know, make baseball fun again crusade.
Right.
It's like, because it's a game. You're supposed to be endearing yourself to your fans, endearing yourself to kids to make them want to play it more. And no kid is going to want to play baseball if you have to, like, rigidly line up and not have any fun and not watch your home run. And, again, it's a game. Let people have fun.
And then, yeah, and then if you're terrified to stand in the batter's box because you're like, oh, man.
This guy's going to throw
it. I'm going to get hit now, aren't
yeah.
I? Yeah.
And that's the thing. Sometimes when it just gets into a battle where people just start throwing at each other for no reason, so somebody that didn't even do anything is going to get, like, hit with a baseball for no reason.
Right. Or even if it is unintentional and you've got a pitcher that all of a sudden is just wild and he hits a couple guys, you still know that the other team's like, because it hurts.
Yeah.
And even if you know they haven't done it on purpose, it's like
you gotta retaliate.
I get it. It's angry, and it's a couple times. I know your hitters are in the dugout thinking, "Well, we need to hit a couple of their guys." And then, so if you're the other team's best hitter, you're going up there just.
I'm gonna get hit.
I'm just about to get plonked.
Yeah.
I know.
So it's ridiculous. Again, these unwritten rules. I really wish that somebody, Rob Manfred, whoever, would stand up and do something about it, because it's gone on for way too long, and it's just too stupid. Quite frankly, it's just one of the stupidest things in all of sports. So that's my venting and ranting for the day. And that'll wrap up this edition of The Crossover here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco and Chris Brame, always happy to bring you episodes of The Crossover. We're done with episode 2, so next week, check back with 960theref.com for episode number 3. Y'all have a good week and check back in with us next week.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.